Time for Sports Lit 101. Bruce Pratt joining us via Skype from his home down in the Mid-Coast region. Hi there, Bruce.
Hello, Rich. Hey, Carrie.
How are you doing? How are you feeling?
I'm doing great. I feel super. I'm glad to be going back to school tomorrow. I would like to get that horrible Paxlovid taste out of my mouth finally.
Oh, isn't that brutal?
Oh, God, that is awful. And the only thing that works, I found, is russet Cape Cod potato chips.
Well.
Hold it at bay for a while.
That might be a positive right there. But It sounds like your experience with COVID wasn't too bad. You made out all right overall because, well, you've done the right thing. You got all your shots, and then you were able to get the Paxlovid.
Yes, I did. And Janet is on the other one. Of course, she came down with it, too, the other drug that they use. And I've got to say, I felt bad for about 36 hours, and it wasn't horrible. I mean, I've had flu that was a lot worse than that. But again, double vaxxed, triple boosted, I think that makes all the difference.
Well, we're glad to hear that you're on the other side of it. Indeed. What have we got for Sports Lit today?
Well, I had planned to be at the university this morning and go through many years of backathlons looking for some sports poetry and the like, but I have enough old ones here, and so I found a poem that arrived sort of serendipitously to my knowledge. I don't know how I missed this because I was a member at the time this came, but it was a great article Sunday in the New York Times about LeBron James, and I don't care how anybody feels about the guy one way or the other. He's one hell of a basketball player, and he's done a lot of very wonderful things. You know, maybe his interview with Jim Nance wasn't the greatest thing ever, but, you know, the guy's been a winner. He's done a tremendous amount for his hometown. And he's been chided by a lot of people for not being enough of a crusader, a spokesman. And I don't know that that's necessarily fair. But the other night, he finally eclipsed Jabbar's record for points. And I found this wonderful poem by a guy named Bill Cushing, who teaches out in California, called Kareem. From the 2015 athlon, and I thought this would be a fitting one, then we'll move over to baseball poems. It's called Kareem. It took 40 years of aging to get you to leave the court, yet rather than older, you are taller, towering over everyone before and probably everyone who will ever come to play. I was just learning the game when I first heard the name Lou Alcindor, only one of three who could leap and reach over the top of the boards to touch the back. The other two were Russell and Wilt, and you were still in school. You kept the strength of the big man inside, blocking shots, driving powerful and smooth as a Coltrane solo. Then you changed your name to Kareem, and after changing the game forever from layups to untippable skyhooks, shots leaving the wrist from outside the key in an arc, so grateful and perfect, they surpass pyramids, lunar landings, and maybe even resurrections.
Wow, that's great. Love it.
Yeah, I must have flipped the page quickly. It's when I was first reading it, because I did mention the other poems right after that in one point, and I was pretty surprised that I had missed that. And, you know, I was thinking about this. Jabbar has been a spokesman for decency and justice and fought against racism. And he's not only black, but he's Muslim and has faced a lot of that with, I think, incredible class. I mean, I think of him as a guy with a lot of class, like Bill Russell has done. So anybody that's on LeBron's case at the moment, you know, he's 38 years old. He might play another two or three years. We don't know. He might play longer. What he does in his post-basketball career, that'll speak for itself. But right now, I think people could just get off his case.
I agree with you completely on that.
Anyone that's ever been a Little League coach or a high school baseball coach, and you have, I think will like this poem. It's by someone named Jacob Collins Wilson, called Hitting Fungos. And a fungo bat can make us all a hero. I stand in the dirt in front of home so the ball doesn't catch the lip and hit fungo after fungo to kids. Some of them are here because they know they'd get in trouble anywhere else. So they turn their hats backwards. Some with shirts tucked in and hat facing forward are here because their fathers made them. And the rest worry about the cleanliness of their shoes because they think they'll become all-stars. I used to think I'd become a Hall of Famer. I used to think I'd become something, but it doesn't matter. The sun has come out, and this is where we are. The pop of the ball on the bat, the snap of the glove at first. I toss another ball up and flick it to short. Maybe I'm helping. Probably it doesn't matter. From this distance, they all look the same in baseball pants and jerseys that don't quite fit. Here on the lip of home, in the repetition of hitting fungos, I am content, have stopped hoping. At least I am aware, wondering, waking up. Maybe one of them will become a real ball player. Most will become nothing they wanted to be. In a few years, a few of them will be tossing another ball up and whipping the fungo around. That is all there is in human effort.
I love that, too. I miss that. I miss hitting fungos. I love that.
You know, what I really miss was coaching T-ball. Because when I did, it was when the first time that where I lived that they were letting girls and boys play together. And watching the kids like my son Ben that would stand in the outfield and watch the hawks circling above as much as they would the bat or the ball, and those wonderful warm, well, up in the hills of the Berkshires, sometimes warm late spring afternoons and evenings, that there was the time when kids never seem more sort of socially together than they do when they're waiting for their turn to go up and swing at the tee. I remember when I first went to my first SLA, the theme was, what do you do with a knuckleball? Wait till it stops rolling and pick it up. Or how do you catch a knuckleball? Which was something Euchre said, and Judy Hakala put it in the program. This is called Regarding the Knuckler by an Australian poet named John Gray, who I don't know much about, but has written some really great poems. Regarding the Knuckler. Between the pitch and when it wobbles over the plate, the batter has too much time on his hands. He could read 6 Bible passages, call home on his cell phone, discuss the weather with the catcher, seek out his father in the stands. No 90-mile-an-hour wind buster this, no curveball dropping like an elevator. It's a ball game in slow motion, that leather like a sick bird trying to fly. The pitcher, hitter, watch it amble forward like it's on TV. They can imagine the direction of the broadcast conducted from his van. Close up on the stitches, please. Do we have time to cut to commercial? As the ball crosses the plate, it seems to hang there for a moment, suspended like a cartoon character, unimpressed by gravity. Hitter forgets he has a bat. It's been so long the pitcher can't remember throwing it. The umpire is mesmerized. Finally, the baseball, weary of the journey, curls up in the catcher's mitt like a puppy. The crowd is silent, waiting for the call. It's the closest one pitch ever comes to being 2 strikes or 3 balls at once. The ump's hand flops from side to side, the signal for whatever.
Nice, very nice.
Yeah, I always wanted to learn how to throw a ruck, knuckleball, but I couldn't. This last poem that I'm going to read is called Slugger. It's by our friend Don Johnson from East Tennessee, NSLA, a friend of the show, been on a couple times with us. It's called Slugger. The only home run I hit in high school came after our coach at third base chided me for swinging late at an outside fastball. You swinging that bat or is that bat swinging you? He taunted. It was the heaviest bat in our bag, a 35-inch Mickey Mantle Louisville slugger that I lacked the chops to swing. Still, I craved the magic, the mitt's extended step, his smooth rotation rendering the big stick weightless. It worked once, almost, at Rappahannock High School in the Blue Ridge, where left field fell away into a pasture and right offered up a porch, a real front porch, the target. I still swung late, but made contact, the ball rising enough to clear the pig wire fence and shingled knee wall, then pinballing off the door and sliding and sighting as I trotted around the bases, slowing around third to mutter at the coach, "The bat swing's good." Those words came back yesterday when among the rakes and shovels in the workshop, I found the scarred ash slugger from Louisville and the alliterative name. Not my bat, but a cracked, shorter model. Useless, even for the neighbor's kids. So I hauled it out with scrap lumber from the garage, dead limbs and clippings, where I laid it on a liquor box, turning the label away as I'd been taught, before I struck the match, so I wouldn't have to watch the name go up in smoke.
Wow. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, Don is just such a fabulous poet and a great guy. And I'm really hoping that in June, when he's on his way to New Brunswick, he and Corey Willard and I will stop by the studio before the Wednesday before SLA, and we'll get a chance to all say hello there.
That's good stuff. Bruce, thank you as always.
My pleasure, and I'm looking forward to seeing you guys at the studio next week.